Good morning. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the state of Georgia. I hope you're doing well this chilly morning. The phone number, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I got a public service announcement, if you will, from a listener in Rome, Georgia. And it is a worthy cause, and I want to make sure those of you who are listening in Rome know this. Toys for Tots in Rome could use some volunteers. And I suspect around the state, Toys for Tots could use some volunteers. They got more than 5,000 Toys for Tots items piled up in a warehouse in Rome. They need help handling those toys, distributing those toys. So if you can, look for Toys for Tots in Rome and volunteer. I don't want to give out the email address or contact information here because I know that there are copious numbers of trolls who will harass the people as well. But if you live in Rome, I'm sure you know where to look for help or where to look to reach out to the folks. But they could use some help. And I suspect in your local community as well, they need some volunteers in various places, food banks, soup kitchens, Toys for Tots drives. Also, just so you are aware, in Atlanta, if you know Clark Howard, the consumer affairs guy in Atlanta, he does a program with St. Vincent de Paul every year through local Walmarts, and they coordinate through the state to provide toys for every child in foster care in the state of Georgia. And they do a tremendous effort across the state, particularly in the metro Atlanta area, but in Walmarts across the state. They keep lists of kids who need toys, who want toys. Essentially what they do is they do lists of the kids in foster care, and those kids all write down a list of toys they would like for Christmas, and you can buy one or all the toys on the list. It's a great cause, and I thoroughly encourage you to do that. But in particular, who was it? I'm trying to find Randy. So Randy knows I got his email in Rome. Reached out and said, please, could you mention this? He listens to the show up there, and Toys for Tots is such a good program. So if you're in the Rome area in particular, they need help with Toys for Tots, just staffing and taking care of things. Now, we need to get back into the Kelly Loeffler situation. The governor intends to make the announcement tomorrow. The reason he's holding off on the announcement is they want to give Johnny Isaacson his due. And Johnny Isaacson today will be honored in the nation's capital and in Atlanta for his service to the country before he steps aside at the end of the year. The governor intends to announce Kelly Loeffler to be Johnny Isaacson's replacement in the Senate. She is the, I guess at this point we can call her the senator designate. She's not a senator elect because she hadn't been elected, but she is going to be the designated appointed senator. She will be on the ballot in November of 2020. And then again in 2022, the way the Constitution works, the governor of the state gets to appoint her to serve until the next general election. The next general election will be in 2020, and that will be when the voters then get to affirm or deny her the ability to continue in service of that senator's seat. And if she continues in service to that senator's seat, she will continue until 2022, which is the end of Johnny Isaacson's term, at which time she'll be on the ballot again. And in 2022, Brian Kemp will also be on the ballot here in Georgia. And then she'll become her own senator. It'll be fully her seat. She will not be serving the unexpired term of a existing senator. Now, there's a three-card Monty shuffle. I assume you know what three-card Monty is, don't you? It's the card trickster's game where they shuffle the three cards rapidly, and you're supposed to pick the particular card, and oftentimes there's a sleight of hand where they remove the card. You can't find the card. It's hard to keep up with which of the cards, and there are three cards shuffling on the deck right now, and we need to keep track of those cards and keep things in their own lanes. There is absolutely 100 billion percent... a coordinated effort to push Brian Kemp to put Doug Collins in the Senate. It is coordinated. It is organized. They are dropping opposition research on Kelly Loeffler to rile up conservatives. They got Sean Hannity yesterday attacking Brian Kemp, calling him a biblical donkey on radio with the actual word as opposed to calling it a biblical donkey. He's getting people to call Brian Kemp. He's got conservative activists fired up and concerned, and it is all designed to help Doug Collins. And I know Brian Kemp. I like Brian Kemp. I don't know him super well. We are friends. We interact fairly regularly. I have not brought up the Senate seat to him at all. I know him well enough to know that when you call him a biblical donkey on radio and you demand that people start harassing him and start attacking him and bad-mouthing him, that is the number one way to ensure that he does not listen to you. He will dig in his heels, double down, and do what he intends to do, which is appoint Kelly Loeffler. That is a coordinated effort from Doug Collins. There is a coordinated effort to make Kelly Loeffler happen. That's the second lane. The Kemp folks are rallying their resources, and they're working hard to make sure she will be a competent candidate and out of the gate make no missteps, because they know that people will be piling on her between now and the end of the year. And then there is the third lane, and the third lane is conservative groups who are really concerned about Kelly Loeffler, and they really, really don't like her as a pick. And we got to be very careful here, so that we don't confuse the coordinated effort with Collins with the effort of conservative groups to dissuade this. And I think the Kemp campaign, and frankly, I think I did a little bit need to apologize, conflate the two, and they are very distinct efforts here, and we need to make sure that they are kept in their lanes. There is a lot of concern out there, and I want to break this down for you. Conservative groups across the nation right now are rallying to try to stop Kelly Loeffler, and it's not going to work. And it's not going to work because, in part, I think that the Kemp team, that they made up their mind long ago, and two, it's been conflated with the Collins effort. I honestly think the effort to put Doug Collins in the Senate has done a disservice to Doug Collins. I think he has some friends who very much want to see him get this, and they've hurt him in the process without realizing it. I also think that it has hurt the conservative movement, because a lot of the people who are pushing Doug Collins are echoing the talking points of conservative groups, and it makes it sound like they are the same groups, and they're not. There are some good conservative groups out there, Susan B. Anthony List, Concerned Women of America, March for Life, and others who are really concerned about Kelly Loeffler and the pro-life issue. And the conservative movement doesn't have any reason to trust Brian Kemp. I do. I live in Georgia. I know him. I trust him. They don't. And they've got a stake in this race, because while it's a Senate seat, it is a United States Senate seat. It's not a Georgia Senate seat. Whoever sits in Johnny Isaacson's chair is going to vote on judges for the entire federal judiciary, not just Georgia, the entirety of federal policy and law, not just Georgia, and a whole lot more. So when the Susan B. Anthony List, Concerned Women for America, March for Life, American Principles Project all speak with one voice with the same concern, our reaction should not be to assume they're coordinating with Doug Collins. They're not. Their concerns are actually pretty legitimate, and their opposition's pretty notable. And again, I trust Brian Kemp to get this right. And I think you should trust in Georgia Brian Kemp to get this right. We know the man. The man has stood with us. He's taken lots of risks. He's bet big, and he's won all of them. But look at it from the perspective of conservative groups in D.C., where Johnny Isaacson is a fairly moderate senator, but he is pro-life, and he stood with them issue after issue after issue. These people see a business executive who's on the board of Grady Hospital in Atlanta, which has a history of performing abortions and being tied to an Emory clinic that trains abortionists. They see a business executive with an ownership interest in the WNBA, which is explicitly hostile to conservatives. It is not friendly in any way, shape, or form to conservative values or Christians, and it is explicitly friendly to Planned Parenthood. It raises money for Planned Parenthood. It contributes profits to Planned Parenthood, which is where people go to kill children. They also see a business executive who's given lots of money to Democratic candidates over the years, including Hillary Clinton. And they also see a business executive who has wanted to be involved in politics for some time, at least going back to 2014, but has never bothered to make inroads with conservative social groups, socially conservative groups in D.C., even though she's wanted to be in Republican politics. Conservative groups in D.C., particularly the pro-life groups, they're actually pretty good experts at ferreting out the posers. They know the people who are going to lie to their face to them. In fact, I suspect a significant portion of the politicians who will be in hell are people who lied to pro-life groups and said they love Jesus and babies, but please don't ever make us vote on those issues. I actually have a friend of mine who now works for the Trump administration who used to work for a pro-life group who said she much preferred to go talk to Barbara Boxer in the Senator Nancy Pelosi in the House, or Zoe Lofgren, or several of the others, because she could go in knowing they fundamentally disagree on everything. And from that fundamental disagreement, maybe they could find common cause. But she particularly noted, like, Saxby Chambliss when he was in the Senate and several others in the Senate, Republicans at the time, that she could go in and be patted on the head and they would talk about how they love Jesus and babies, but they never actually wanted to do anything for the pro-life cause. She could actually, on charitable issues and PEPFAR and issues like this, she could get Democratic support in a way a lot of Republicans, they didn't even want to talk about it because she was in the pro-life movement. She was to be seen and not heard, and it very much made her mad. And there is concern that a lot of Republicans in Washington in particular do like to pat on the head pro-lifers because they need their votes, but please don't ever make them stand up for that issue. Now, therein lies the intersection on this issue for me, and it should be for you, and why I'm willing to give Brian Kemp the benefit of the doubt on this. Loeffler is Kemp's choice, and Kemp is a governor who replaced Nathan Deal. Nathan Deal, I have a great deal of respect for him and his education reform, but you will also recall Nathan Deal is the guy who said he would sign the Religious Freedom Restoration Act into law in Georgia. And the way they did it is they did it in a year when he was not on the ballot and all the Republicans in the legislature were. So the Republicans in the legislature could all vote for RFRA, and then Governor Deal could break his promise and actually veto the legislation he said he would sign. So all the Republicans in the legislature got to say, well, I voted for it, too. That awful Nathan Deal, how dare he? We'll override his veto when we get back after the election. Just vote for us and get us back in office. And then they never did. And he could never be held accountable by the voters. He betrayed them. And then let's also not forget that he intervened to stop faith-based protections for religious adoption agencies. So if you're a faith-based adoption agency in Georgia, the legislature was considering legislation to prevent you from being harassed by secular atheist groups. And Governor Deal blocked that, used his leverage in the legislature to stop that. He loved Jesus and babies, but he never liked to actually advance the cause through legislation. Now, Kemp came in, and a lot of people were expecting the exact same thing with him with Deal, that he would say he'd sign fetal heartbeat legislation, he would wait until the year after the election, they would all vote for it, and he would veto it, and no one could hold him accountable. But, in fact, he personally intervened and picked up votes to make sure that the fetal heartbeat legislation passed in a way that could get the votes to get through the legislature, and he could sign it. He also, you will recall, along with Jeff Duncan, intervened to hold Senate Republicans accountable for school choice legislation. They ultimately killed it. But Kemp got involved, got his hands dirty, and was willing to anger senators in the Georgia legislature over school choice legislation. He has also worked on regulatory reform to ensure, even though the legislature hasn't passed it, he's been able to protect faith-based adoption agencies in Georgia. He's put his money where his mouth is. He's put his votes and his policies where his mouth is. He's kept his word. And so I trust him. But I think he and Kelly Loeffler do need to do a little bit better. And the reason I say that is because he made everybody who was interested in the job apply for the Senate seat. And then, miracle of miracles, Kelly Loeffler files at the very last minute, on the very last day, they shut off registration, and suddenly there's buzz that it's going to be Loeffler. Sounds like the fix was in all along. It sounds like it was a done deal, and it sounds like there was no way to persuade him otherwise. There's been no effort since then to court social conservative groups at the national level. There's just been a trust us attitude. Well, I can trust the governor. I don't know Loeffler from Adam or Eve, but I can trust the governor, but these national groups can, and they do have a vested interest in this because it's going to be a United States Senate pick, not a Georgia Senate pick. Now, the governor and Kelly Loeffler, though, they do have to do something. It's very strategic what they have to do. They have to be mindful of it, and we should be mindful of it, too. And we should discuss what they have to do when we come back.
As both sides target Georgia for 2020, Eric gives you the news you need from a Georgia perspective.
Oh, we'll get back to the governor and Kelly Loeffler here in a moment, but this is sad news. Charlie Culberson is now a free agent. The Braves have declined to offer a contract to him. They think they can get somebody for better money. They think his performance, and statistically, his performance has declined, but man, he's a good guy. I think the Braves need to keep Culberson. I like him. I just like him personally. The fans love him. He's a good guy, and the Braves need to keep him. But it's their money. They can do with it as they please. Now, let's get back to Kemp and Loeffler. They've got to stave off an attack from the right. And because if conservatives decide she's not one of them, then they could challenge her in November 2020. They could put up Doug Collins. They've got to do that. And so they need to start making real outreach to conservatives now. George in Hushton, let's go to you right now. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Eric?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well. Hey, here's my thoughts. I don't think we're going to know, unfortunately, what her pro-life real thoughts are until, you know, she actually has to vote on something. But I think we're going to know sooner whether she supports from a, you know, there's two things. There's the Trump group and there's conservatives, and they sometimes cross over, but they're not always the same. On the Trump side of things, I don't know if she's going to support his economic agenda. The NBA certainly didn't when it comes to China. They right. kind of fell in lockstep with China as opposed to Trump. I'm guessing the WNBA would do the same. I'm wondering if she'll vote against her business, so to speak, to support the president. So,
well, and you know, George, I was actually got an email last night from someone who said the Bitcoin people are mad about the pick because she runs a company that is essentially venture capital in Bitcoin, and the libertarian faction within cryptocurrency really doesn't like that her company makes money off it. They consider it a pure system. So they're upset about the pick as well. And, you know, to your point, if the Senate's tied up in impeachment next year, there may be no substantive votes of the Senate anyway to even build a record.
True.
So, yeah.
But then the other thing, you know, what does Trump do in terms of, does Trump come out and trash her right now? I think Trump has to kind of stay quiet a little bit because he needs her vote.
Right.
Potentially.
Well, yeah. And you know, as a matter of fact, and George, thanks very much for the phone call there. I was actually told by someone from the White House last night that the president himself is not involved in any of this, that he and Brian Kemp met. It was a cordial meeting, unlike what some of the press said about it, and that he's willing to let the governor make his pick, that he has assurances that Loeffler will stand with him and oppose impeachment and support his judges. And that's good enough for him. And that's probably going to be good enough for much of the base. But, you know, we only need to look at Charlie Crist and David Dewhurst to understand what can happen when conservatives unite. Now, the National Republican Senatorial Committee and Mitch McConnell have said they're going to come out and fully support her. They will treat her as an incumbent. They will pour money into the 2020 race to make sure she gets elected. But, you know, Charlie Crist and David Dewhurst both had the NRSC and Mitch McConnell backing them. McConnell even sent some staff down to help Charlie Crist, and he got blown up by Marco Rubio. David Dewhurst got blown up by Ted Cruz because conservatives rallied and united. If conservatives were to rally and unite around a Doug Collins, they could potentially beat Kelly Loeffler. And she and Brian Kemp are smart enough to know that they've got to do some serious outreach to conservatives to get the conservatives on board. They're going to be very critical over the next few weeks that she does outreach. And, you know, again, I'm trusting the Kemp team. I've got a handful of mutual friends with Kelly Loeffler. I don't know her at all, but I've got friends who say she's a devout Catholic, that she's pro-life, that she's a social conservative. But the conservative groups in D.C. are right. She's got zero paper trail. Zero paper trail. She doesn't have a single history of supporting pro-life causes or groups. She doesn't have a history of giving to conservative causes or groups. She's got a history of giving to Democrats, though. Giving to Mitt Romney doesn't count. And, you know, normally you could say, well, trust but verify, but it's real hard to verify when the deal's already done. The governor is going to give the advantages of incumbency to someone that we can't verify. So it comes down to trust. And I trust Brian Kemp, but I also trust Marjorie Dennisfelser. I trust Penny Nance. I trust the March for Life. They've dedicated themselves to the pro-life cause. They have enough history to know when they're being played, and right now they feel like they're going to be played. So Kelly Loeffler is going to have to reach out and earn the trust from these women and from the conservative movement. And it's a trust I'm assured she'll be able to earn. And I'll support Brian Kemp, so I'll support his pick. But I trust him and not Kelly Loeffler. She's going to have to earn the trust from people. And if she can't earn the trust and she can't move quickly to do it, then conservatives are going to have to move quickly to contest her and put someone up against her in 2020. We don't need a Lisa Murkowski and we don't need a Susan Collins in Georgia. We can do better and more conservative. And if Loeffler offers us more conservatives, great. Nothing to worry about. Let's get behind her and rally. But if she's squishy or worse, well, then we can pick her off at the ballot box in November of 2020. I hope it won't come to that, though. We'll be back. You should text recipe to 33777. Why? Because I send out the best recipes every week, particularly during the holiday season. Y'all can be fat like me. Okay, we got to move to impeachment as the Democrats rev up their effort this week. Hush, Siri. Rev up their effort in the House to bore everyone to death this week with academic discussions of impeachment and all sorts of other weird things they're doing. Now, Tony, I don't want to butcher your last name. Is it Saya?
Saya, you're not too bad, Eric.
Listen, I've been practicing all morning thanks to YouTube.
There you go.
So
listen, it's phonetically pronounced. Say egg. Say the word egg. You're done.
There you go. Now, for those of you listening, Tony's joining me from the White House. And, Tony, I got to tell you, I saw what the Democrats, what they've made public this week. And I'm thinking if people are insomniacs, they might want to watch what's going on this week.
Well, so you basically have the Judiciary Committee trying to pick up the pieces that were shattered by the failure of the House Intelligence Committee to find anything remotely wrong that the president did, let alone impeachable. And they're having hearings, and their kind of view is if they get these three liberal academic professors to make the case that the Congress has the right to impeach the president, which we know is in the Constitution,
right,
but they're somehow going to sell something that failed miserably as far as getting the American people to support through the last two rounds of hearings in the Intelligence Committee. I think what you're unfortunately seeing, Eric, is an abuse of the constitutional authority of Congress to impeach and remove a president by a group of hyper-partisans who have been essentially distraught won in the first place and know that he'll probably win again if they don't try to do something to thwart him. This is not based on anything impeachable. This is everything personal and political, and it's why we consider this entire process a sham.
Well, I've got to ask you just on the political reality of this. Rick Klein from ABC News Now has said on various news shows on Saturday, Sunday, and yesterday that Democrats are really upset. They think they've got the president and no one seems to care and polls aren't shifting. And I'm scratching my head over this, having heard all of the testimony that the president asked Ukraine if it might do something. They didn't do what he asked them to do. They got the money that supposedly was withheld. And the Democrats have had to go from saying quid pro quo to bribery. I don't know where the bribe is in this, but it seems like the only consistency here is the president, and the Democrats keep changing every other day.
Well, listen, I mean, when you think about the 12 star witnesses the Democrats brought forward, what did they confirm? That there was a meeting with both the vice president and President Zelensky of Ukraine and the president and President Zelensky of Ukraine that was set up without preconditions. And ultimately, the president released the aid to Ukraine without any precondition. And their entire allegation on the Democrat side is that all of this was conditioned on some sort of investigation, or at least the announcement of an investigation. Never happened. Never happened, Eric. And ultimately, the greatest irony, if you actually watched, because I know a lot of Americans were smart enough not to bore themselves by watching the hearings, but one of the things that came out was even though the biggest critics of the president said he ultimately had a better Ukraine policy than President Obama because he released the lethal military aid that the Obama administration never gave Ukraine. And he did it well within the September 30th deadline to release the aid in the first place. So this whole matter, much like the Mueller report, is Democrats sensationalizing something and ultimately not being able to produce any evidence to substantiate it. And unfortunately, in the process, they're wasting the time of the American people. Americans don't care about this. This doesn't help your paycheck go up. This doesn't create a job. This doesn't help you enjoy your life or protect your family. The polling is reflecting so much.
You're raising issues that the voters are raising on the campaign trail to Democrats, who and the Democrats seem very perplexed that the voters aren't raising the issue of impeachment on the campaign trail.
Well, it's a losing issue outside of a narrow Democrat primary. Listen, I also think, you know, voters know what they know. You know, they've given this a look, and I think anybody objective realizes there's nothing impeachable here. And then they reflect on what's the most important, you know, for them and their families, which is why the president continues to do his job. I mean, he's in Europe right now, and I think it is interesting to note that Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff are producing an impeachment report that they're going to release tonight while the president's meeting with our NATO allies, that Jerry Nadler's conducting these hearings while our president's trying to meet with our most important strategic partners. But look, the president's doing what he has to do to continue to lead the country, which is why we have the best economy we've had in half a century, lowest unemployment we've had in half a century among all different demographics. And you have wages going up for the first time in over a decade.
Right.
And that's because you have a president focused on doing the job that the American people sent him to do. And you have a small group of Democrats, 231 of them, who are trying to literally contradict the will of the people, 63 million that voted for Donald Trump in 2016, and get in the way of an election that's happening in less than a year.
Well, one last thing for here, and I was thinking about this morning. There's a headline now that Apple has, in its maps of Ukraine, shifted Crimea to designated as Russian territory. And I thought it was very interesting that the Democrats, who are outraged at the president who actually sent weapons assistance to Ukraine that Obama didn't, haven't really said anything about Apple doing this, and yet they're all outraged that the president's somehow undermining Ukraine. And here's an American company doing this, and the Democrats are totally silent. It just amplifies to me that this really is a political issue.
There's no doubt about it, Eric. This is not based on any legitimate and genuine concern about the Ukraine or about the president abusing his power. Presidents withhold aid to foreign countries on a regular basis. It's actually an obligation to make sure these countries are spending the money correctly. We know Ukraine has had a historic issue with corruption. The president has focused on the idea of European countries sharing the burden, and another issue of why he was holding up the aid. There's absolutely no doubt that this is all based on just a political vendetta and agenda, and has no real basis in a serious disagreement with the president on how he conducted himself or policy.
Tony, listen, I appreciate you stopping by very much. Thank you for taking the time, and you have good luck watching all these hearings this week and try not to fall asleep.
I appreciate it, Eric. Great to be with you and your listeners.
Thanks very much. Tony Saya, he is with the White House Communications Office talking about impeachment. Listen, I do think it is relevant to this. If you haven't heard the news, Apple, and I'm totally within the cult of Apple. I've got my iPad here, my iPhone. I've got my Apple Watch, which occasionally triggers during the show. I've got my Mac, iMac behind me, MacBook Pro in front of me, and Apple has decided to, on its Apple Maps program in Russia in particular, designate Crimea as Russian territory. And now it says after some media outrage, it's going to go through a review. One of the Democrats' overarching concerns with the president on impeachment is that the president undermined Ukrainian integrity and undermined Ukrainian security when it came to the Russians, and that we need to stand in solidarity with Ukraine. We need to have Ukraine's back. It is deeply relevant that the president sent weapons systems to Ukraine that Barack Obama did not send to Ukraine. That is deeply relevant, I think, that the president was willing to send the Javelin systems to Ukraine when so many people on the Democratic side did not want to send the Javelin weapon systems to Ukraine when they thought it would escalate the tension. We have this entire mythology on the Democratic side right now that the president is a tool of the Russians. We hear this repeatedly, that the Russians are they're in bed with the Trump administration, the Trump campaign. They're trying to help the president steal the election, on and on and on, trying to find this. This is Fiona Hill and David Holmes, who were two of the Democrat star witnesses, actually agreed with the president sending the Javelin system to Ukraine that Barack Obama blocked.
What's the view from the field, the U.S. Embassy, as to the effectiveness of the Javelins?
They're an important strategic deterrent. They're not actively employed in combat operations right now, but the mere idea that were the Russians to advance substantially using certain kinds of armor, that the Ukrainians would have this capability, deters them from doing so. And it also thereby sends a very important symbolic message to the Ukrainian military that they have access to this high-end technology and that we trust them to do it. I would only add also that they've offered to buy some using their own funds. The initial tranche was provided through a program to do that, but they've now offered to spend their own money to buy more. So I think they think they're important.
So we sent Javelin weapon systems that the Obama administration had not sent. And the president didn't get any credit from the Democrats for doing this, but the very aides who testified on behalf of the Democrats noted that this is something that this White House did that the Obama administration did not do. And I think that's an important point. And as Tony said, they got the aid. Listen, if the president had fundamentally withheld this aid and didn't want to give it to Ukraine, that would be a problem. But we released it. We released the aid, and they didn't do an investigation. There was no quid pro quo here. And so the Democrats have moved on to bribery, but there was no bribe. The money was lawfully appropriated by Congress. The president gave them the money Congress appropriated. So how is that bribery? If that's bribery, anytime the president administers money appropriated by Congress, it's a bribe. So there's no bribe. Are they going to go to extortion now? I mean, that extortion is actually more plausible an argument. The president threatened to withhold the money, threatened to deny them the money, except the president in his phone call with the president of Ukraine didn't actually do that. So why are we even here? Let the voters decide this. It is really deeply telling, though, to me that an American corporation, Apple, has changed its maps at the demands of Russia, and the people who have been blasting the president over not supporting Ukraine are completely quiet on Apple doing this. And I think that is a fundamental problem. I think it is it fundamentally undermines the argument that Democrats deeply care about Ukraine. I think we should care about Ukraine, by the way. I absolutely think we should. We should have Ukraine's back here. I think Russia actually is a menace, and Russia is trying to undermine us, China as well. We need to have Ukraine's back. And I frankly wish this administration would do even more to help Ukraine. But I think the fact that the Democrats are willing to turn a blind eye to things that undermine Ukraine, including what an American corporation is doing, kind of gives away that this is all a political thing with the president. Now, we'll talk more about impeachment in a little while. We do also need to note that the president is in Europe. Tony mentioned that they're in Great Britain for a summit of NATO leaders. What's so very interesting here is that the Russia situation continues to come up there as well. Macron, the president of France, has said that he thinks that Europe needs to have closer relationships with Russia. Apparently, Angela Merkel, who was born in East Germany, is really opposed to Macron wanting to have a relationship with Russia. She reportedly told him that he keeps smashing the teacups that she's got to then glue together so they can keep having tea together. That's came out in a New York Times story today that she told him that. She is not happy with him. She's not happy with the president. Nobody's happy with her. The president, however, is there and he's pushing for France to stay in NATO, which is kind of funny because the narrative with the president is the president wants to get rid of NATO. And now the president is there saying essentially that France needs NATO. Everybody needs NATO. We got to have NATO together. Here's the president talking about this.
I would say that nobody needs NATO more than France. You just look back over the last long period of time. Nobody needs NATO more than France. And frankly, the one that benefits really the least is the United States. We benefit the least. We're helping Europe. Europe unites and they go against a common foe. That may or may not be a foe. Can't tell you that. But there are other foes out there also. But I think nobody needs it more than France. And that's why I think that when France makes a statement like they made about NATO, it's a very dangerous statement for them to make.
Yeah. Now, you should know that France Charles de Gaulle even walked out of NATO, didn't want to have anything to do with NATO, and came back into NATO in the 90s. France had not always been very cooperative with NATO military control led by the Americans. It used to be, interestingly enough, de Gaulle's concern and prior French leaders' concerns was that the Americans were too in control of NATO. And now Macron's concern is that America is not in control enough of NATO. Genevieve Wood, a friend of mine from the Heritage Foundation, was on Fox News talking about the NATO situation.
Look, he's the first president we've actually seen this happen. You've had plenty of Republicans and Democrats come and go, and they've all said others need to do more, but finally others are doing more. But the president's right. We got to keep the pressure on. I mean, you have countries like Germany and France who are still paying less than 2% of their country's GDP, which is what NATO calls for, on defense for NATO. And I think if you're Germany and France and you look at places like Russia, you might want to up that spending.
Yeah, you might want to up that spending. They, however, do not. We're taking your phone calls, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. When we come back, I had to wake up my kid this morning to show her a movie trailer. You're probably going to want to show your kids as well.
Well-connected and well-respected. It's Eric Erickson, live every weekday.
The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. If you're just tuning in, the Braves have chosen not to re-sign Charlie Culberson. This is from The Athletic. After a second-year decline, Braves fan favorite Charlie Culberson becomes a non-tendered free agent. Culberson, one of the most popular Braves players of recent years, became a free agent Monday when the team declined to offer a contract to the arbitration-eligible utility man. If that is it for his Braves tenure, it was an unceremonious ending following a season that was halted abruptly by facial fractures after he was struck by a fastball from Fernando Rodney in a game against Washington September 14th. Following a decline in performance during his second season, the Braves chose not to commit the approximately $1.8 million Culberson was projected to get through arbitration. Although it's possible the Braves could re-sign Culberson if he doesn't get other offers, they are expected to search for another utility player who could be a strong backup shortstop. They could check out other free agents who were not tendered contracts before Monday's 8 p.m. deadline for teams to offer contracts to unsigned players. The Braves also declined to offer contracts to arbitration-eligible catcher John Ryan Murphy and outfielder Rafael Ortega, making them free agents. They tendered contracts to 37 others on the 40-man roster, including seven who were eligible for arbitration. Starting pitcher Mike Fulton-Newitz. Shane Green, Luke Jackson, Grant Dayton, Dansby Swanson, John Camargo, and Adam Duvall. The projected arbitration salaries from those seven add up to about $25 million, although the Braves will agree to terms with most of them before arbitration hearings in February. Look, I like Culberson. I like Charlie Culberson a lot. I thought it was very sweet. Over Halloween, there was a kid in his neighborhood, I think up in Suwannee, where the kid was dressed up as Culberson, and Culberson saw him and went over and took pictures with the kid. It was great. In any event, I hope he lands on his feet. He's a good dude. My daughter is a huge Black Widow fan. And, you know, I mean, when you think about the Marvel Universe, Captain Marvel is annoying. Really is annoying. Marvel with her went with the feminist girl power stuff, and with Black Widow, she's just awesome. She didn't have to be in the girl power movement. Her actions speak for her themselves. Scarlett Johansson played Black Widow, introduced in Iron Man 2, I believe, as a bodyguard or assistant for Tony Stark, Iron Man. And it turns out she worked all this time with S.H.I.E.L.D. and Nick Fury. And there's been fan demand forever for her to have her own movie. Now, you should know that there a buddy of mine who has done plenty of work out there is not alone. I've heard this from several other people, that there have been concerns over the years that Scarlett Johansson can't hold a movie herself, that it's got to be an ensemble cast, and she's great in an ensemble, but she's not a great actress holding down a movie by herself, and there's some box office evidence of that. But she is loved by fans as Black Widow, And she died. Spoiler, she died in Endgame. And so this movie is set in the past. She's not resurrected. It's set in the past. And my 14-year-old daughter loves Black Widow, did not like Captain Marvel, wanted nothing to do with Captain Marvel, thought it was too in-your-face feminist politics for Captain Marvel. She's a 14-year-old who – and, you know, we don't – contrary to what some people may believe, we don't actually talk politics in our house. I do that for a living. And we don't discuss it with our kids. And I'm a very firm believer in that while my morality and my wife's morality should help shape and guide our children, we should train them to think for themselves and discern for themselves. And she is very put off as a 14-year-old girl with this whole girl power culture that somehow girls are special and set apart. She just wants to show that she can outdo the boys on the field as opposed to I'm a girl and rah-rah. And she proves it every day in class and on the field that she runs circles around the boys. Lord, she can outthink and out-argue anybody, myself included. She's going to be a lawyer. But in any event, so she liked Black Widow because Black Widow just did. You needed someone taken out. Black Widow was the person who was going to take him out. And everybody knew it. You didn't have to have a girl power rah-rah moment for her to do it. And so she gravitated towards Natasha Romanoff and the character. So the trailer is out this morning for the Black Widow. It's going to come out next year. I guess it'll be the first release after Endgame for Marvel, I think. And she was pretty stoked. I woke her up this morning. She overslept anyway, so I had to wake her up and showed her it. And she's very excited about Black Widow coming out and having a strong female superhero that is not in your face about feminism rah-rah-ness. And hopefully they'll keep that in the Marvel movie. Now, when we come back, we need to actually get more into impeachment. There's plenty of stuff to discuss about it. And also, my buddy Dan Darling from the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission is going to come by and talk about his great new Christmas book, which if you're looking for one for Christmas, it's a great one to read. I want to talk to him about that.